It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We're live at Northwest Armory today for First Amendment Friday. Lots of things on the agenda, including, and I was just mentioning this to some of the folks here at the store, there was a brand new record set. It was confirmed just this week. A Canadian military sniper took out an ISIS fighter with a record-breaking shot with a rifle, a Shytac 50, from more than 2 miles away. This is amazing. He was part of Task Force 2, which is an elite unit in the Canadian Army, similar to the U.S. Navy SEAL Team 6. The shot disrupted an ISIS attack on Iraqi security forces. Congratulations to him. Can you imagine a shot from 3,540 meters away? It blew away the previous record, which had been set a few years ago by a British Army sniper, of 2,475 meters. In other words, this most recent shot was almost 1,100 yards farther away than the previous shot had been. First Amendment Fridays are all about your point of view and your ability to exercise your First Amendment freedoms. So dial me up at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Tony's on the line in Renton, listening on Talk Radio 570. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars. Hey, my first question is, what's the cost going to be of all the shutdown potentially and then all the firing it all back up, because that needs to be considered? And then my second question is, are these people actually going to be laid off at no wages, or are they going to get furloughed like happened on one of the federal shutdowns, and they actually got paid anyway?
What Tony's referring to is what we just talked about in the last hour, and that is that the state of Washington has no budget as we stand here today. And if they still have no budget because they're in the third special session now and they can't seem to get their work done, if they have no budget next Friday, the state park system in Washington state, not in Oregon, is going to shut down. 125 parks will shut down for the 4th of July weekend until a new budget is in place. I can't give you a precise number, but I'm sure the government will say there is a cost. Although, let's face it, what are they going to do? Friday morning, they're going to start locking things down. They're going to start turning off lights. I don't think they'll turn off the water and the power, but they will start locking things down and turning things off. And people will go home Friday night at the end of the budget, because that's June 30th. Then when they reopen, and wouldn't it be crazy if they then reopen on Monday or Tuesday and really screw up people's 4th of July plans? Reopening, I guess, means just telling all the employees you're back here Monday morning at 8 o'clock or Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. And I'm sure there's a way to calculate some cost, and I'm sure there's a paperwork cost of formally telling people, you know, we're laying you up. But I'll bet they'll furlough them, and I'd be willing to bet the state employees will not lose a single dime. They will still get paid. The citizens won't get served, which is the part that strikes, you know, my dad used to be a state park ranger, and I don't have anything against the individual employees. But when you have an operation that is supposed to serve the public, and then it disserves the public by hitting the public on this kind of holiday weekend, and then it shuts down. If it does shut down, I can hope they'll have a budget by next Thursday night. But in the meantime, you're really disserving the public. And at the end of the day, if the state employees still get paid but the public gets disserved, there seems something seriously wrong with that.
Absolutely.
So will it be a furlough or a direct layoff? I don't know. Will they qualify for unemployment payments? I honestly don't know, Tony. I can only hope that the state of Washington gets about the business of writing a budget. If people in the private sector did their jobs as inefficiently as the legislatures of Oregon and Washington, they would not have jobs, or the companies they work for would be out of business. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Regarding Johnny Depp's comments. In my opinion, these are not just off-the-cuff comments. I think these people, like the Caesar play that they had going and Kathy Griff, I think these people are putting this out here and trying to plant, on purpose, subliminal messages so that some of these nut jobs out there, like this guy there at the baseball field a week ago, grasp onto this and take this horrific ideas to you know, to task.
And I think you're right. They're trying to norm the idea of violent behavior. And I think it'll end up coming back not just against the president, who's very well protected, but against other people like members of Congress who are not nearly so well protected. And you're right. By norming it and seeing powerful people on the left who do not come out and disown this stuff and say, we want no connection to this. You know, when Madonna made the comment about blowing up the White House, did you see prominent Democrats come out and say that's wrong and she, you know, she should be ashamed of herself and really, you know, say to her, that's outrageous behavior? No, the right had some things to say about it. I know I did. But most of the left were silent because I think they liked the fact that these prominent people are doing it.
Absolutely. And well, one other point is these people better wake up, because there was a gal here that was just found second-degree manslaughter guilty when she texted her boyfriend to continue committing suicide.
You're right.
These people better watch what their little actions are, because they may come home to haunt them, and in a bad way.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I appreciate the phone call. Let's go to David. David, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. So the state of Washington can't legally shut these parks down because they have a contractual agreement with the people that have prepaid to camp at those parks and to rent those services. Every time they rent and pay for it, they make you sign a contract saying this is what you're going to do and this is what you're responsible for. So therefore, that puts them in a binding contract.
Wouldn't it be interesting if a group of people got together in the next couple of days with a friendly lawyer who's willing to do it pro bono and said, we're going to go to court and get an injunction that prevents the state parks of Washington from shutting down at all on your theory, the theory that it is a contractual arrangement and that you've contracted to provide people with this space and you aren't allowed to simply renege on the contract.
Absolutely.
I'd love to see them do it. A class action suit against state parks to tell them they have to stay open. Let's go to Todd in Washington. Hey, Todd, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars. Hey, I just wanted to bring up a little point about this Washington State shutdown as well. I've seen one piece of information come over the Internet about the government shutdown, and it involved firearms purchases. It's stated in the, I can't remember the exact verbiage on the deal, but it was on Washington State letterhead, and it stated that firearms purchases would be delayed or shut off because of government shutdown. And
yep.
I just thought it's funny that that's the only true solid information I've got. You know, I've heard about the park shutdowns and everything else, but it seems like the leading.
So in other words, you lose your Second Amendment rights for a while. You can't go out and buy a gun, and you won't be able to go camping over 4th of July weekend unless the folks in Olympia get their act straightened out and get a budget passed. But they seem unwilling to do that. You know, a long time ago, a friend of mine had a great theory for running the state legislature. Say, we're going to run the legislature this way. If their normal meeting time is 150 days or 100 days, you assign each state lawmaker, your salary is $100,000. And every day that goes by that you haven't finished up the work of the legislature, you lose $1,000. If you get to the end of the 100 days and the whole 100,000 is gone, you're working for free at that point. I think they might take a different approach toward finishing their work if that were the payment system. Let's go to a naysayer. Scott's on the line in Astoria. Scott, thanks for listening on KAST. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, you've always said if we don't like what our elected officials have done, if you want to change a law, contact your elected officials and get the change made, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so having been investigated, John Kitzhaber and his girlfriend, and been cleared
not
enough evidence.
Not cleared.
Okay.
They were not cleared. John Kitzhaber said he was cleared. Sylvia Hayes said she was cleared. Those are both lies. They were not cleared. There was simply a decision not to prosecute them. And believe me, there are people who commit crimes every day where the local DA decides not to return return a true bill or an indictment against them, even though they may well have committed the crime. So they've not been cleared. They were investigated, and I'm anxious to see the results of the investigation, which I'm sure they'll have to release now that they've decided not to go after them with charges.
So if they don't charge them, would you still talk to them about them in the criminal sense?
I would still talk about the acts that they committed. Yes. Can I say they're criminals? No, because that's not factually accurate, because they haven't been committed. They haven't been accused of and adjudicated on a crime. Can I say that I believe that John Kitzhaber broke the law and his girlfriend broke the law, and that John Kitzhaber benefited financially from her lawbreaking activity and his aiding and abetting of that? Sure, I can. I've got a First Amendment free speech right. And the day that John Kitzhaber decides to bring a lawsuit against me, I'd be happy to see it happen, because then I'd get a chance to have him deposed by a lawyer under oath about what he got and what was involved. I'd love to see that happen. It would be, I think, well worth the money to get sued by John Kitzhaber and then be able to say, fine, John, sit down for a deposition. And we're going to publish every last word of that deposition under oath as you describe why you let your girlfriend run a for-profit policy-making business, you know, geographically out of the governor's office as well as operationally out of the governor's office. You told your staff to treat her like a public official. You allowed her to be involved in making decisions for the public. She had no right to do it, and she made money from it. I would love to depose the two of them. Back in just a moment. We're live at Northwest Armory today. Glad to have you stop by. I'm here till 6 o'clock tonight, and you're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. We've got actors joking about assassinating the President of the United States, and yes, they should all receive a visit from the FBI and the Secret Service. On a First Amendment Friday, all points of you are welcome, and of course, naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Let's go to Mike in Seattle listening on Talk Radio 570. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
First-time caller, and I just want to thank you. I just retired from a major school district working in enemy territory. I'm so happy to retire. And this thing with Representative Scalise so infuriated us. And I'll tell you, the zombie apocalypse is forming in our big cities. It's like called liberals. And we are in a very cold coup d'etat, but it's going to heat up. And I just want to thank you, and I encourage all your listeners. The wife and I get so fed up with this nonsense and rhetoric from the left. Well, it had the left lighted a feet under our fire. We went out and first-time members. We went out and bought lifetime memberships to the National Rifle Association, and I do encourage everyone else to do that. I'm not even getting a finder's fee for this.
Good for you.
Mike from Seattle, and I just remember, folks, that Second Amendment is the foundation to the First Amendment. It's the Second Amendment for a reason. If it comes down, you will lose your First Amendment rights.
Well, you're right about that. And by the way, you know, for all the criticism of President Trump, imagine all the things he's already accomplished. And one of them that isn't getting a lot of talk, although I talked about it yesterday on the national show, the nationwide reciprocity bill. This is the one that would, if you have a Washington state permit, it would be good in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. If you have an Oregon permit, it would be good in all 50 states and vice versa. Well, you know that there are states, Hawaii, it's extraordinarily hard to get a permit. California is extraordinarily hard. New York is extraordinarily hard, and so is the District of Columbia. If this nationwide reciprocity passes, then a permit from anywhere applies anywhere in the United States, which is under the 4th and the 10th Amendments, is the way that those laws are supposed to work, like a marriage license or a driver's license. They should work in all 50. That bill now has 200 co-sponsors in the House. That means they are well within range of passing it at 218 because there are a number of people who vote for it, even though they're not co-sponsors of it. They'll still vote for it. They even have three Democrats who've already committed as co-sponsors to vote for it. And if they can get it through the Senate, Trump's already said, he said during the campaign that he wanted nationwide reciprocity. We get that bill passed, it's going to change situations like Congressman Scalise, because he had staff members who are with him who normally carry when they're not working in the district.
Absolutely.
But they carry, and they couldn't carry. They would have had pistols at that baseball field, but they weren't allowed to because they thought we're taking the congressman to baseball practice, then we're returning to the district. And in the District of Columbia, can't carry right now. Change that dynamic, and I think it's going to become a very dangerous place in America for terrorists and criminals. And the criminals and the terrorists know it.
What's going on in our colleges now, folks, with all the liberal claptrap? I worked in an elementary school for years, educating and kids. But the new teachers coming in now, the 23, 24-year-olds, they are snowflakes. They got...
Whoop, hold on a second. Missed you for a second. You said they are snowflakes, Mike?
So many of the young kids coming into the teaching profession now do not do not have any idea what communism or the Cold War was. It's just like you might as well be talking the Civil War to them. They're not connected to it. But they don't have a good education, but they have a good left-wing political indoctrination.
That's a good way of putting it. Mike, thanks a lot, and congrats to both you and your wife. Let's go to Bruce. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars. Thanks for the call. You know, this may be overstating the obvious, but I think there are people out there who need to hear the obvious overstated many, many times. This thing with the parks in the state of Washington, it sounds to me just like the, hey, you better pass this bond levy or we're going to shut down your local fire department, or pass this thing or we're going to shut down your police department. When the truth is, the money is there. The money has always been there. It's just that they keep rearranging the budget to test catch-up.
No, and that's one of the most surprising, not surprising, one of the most disappointing things about government, Bruce. You know that I did the show in Baton Rouge on Monday, and I was one of the people I talked to then was Congressman Garrett Graves, who's from Louisiana, and he told me that the guy who's the governor of Louisiana right now, John Bel Edwards, he's a Democrat. You'd think they'd be really good at giving out money. They've had $400 million that was allocated to Louisiana to try to help out people who were hit by floods that happened in August of last year. So now, 11 months ago, they haven't given the money out because John Bel Edwards, the governor, says, well, we can't find the proper third-party vendor to come in and help us figure out how to give the money away. Now, how incompetent can government be when it's allocated a huge sum like that and it can't figure out how to sort out the people in a state who've been hit by a terrible disaster like a bunch of floods, or if it happens in California, earthquake, or the same in the Northwest, and they can't figure out how to give the money to the people who need it? That's just
like
it's pathetic.
It sounds like he's looking for one of his crony buddies who does that kind of a thing for a living so that he can give that job to them.
Exactly. Hey, here's $400 million. See if you can give out $300 million of it and keep the rest for yourself. That's the kind of thing. When government is so incompetent they can't figure out how to give out money, then they need to be taken out of office and replaced. We're live on First Amendment Friday at Northwest Armory, and you're listening to the First Amendment Friday edition of the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails on this First Amendment Friday. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, and always glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Kelly Workman joins me now, who's the operations manager for KJDY Radio in John Day, Oregon, right there on the eastern side of the state. Kelly, good to have you on the program.
Hey, Lars. Glad to be on.
So tell me what's going on out there in eastern Oregon on federal forest land that you're expecting an invasion of, what, 30,000 aging hippies who've decided that they want to come out to the forest and spend a little while there?
Yeah, it's the Rainbow Family Gathering. It's their national gathering. They're talking anywhere from 10 to 20,000 showing up. We've already got some of the members showing up. We've got about 2,000 people out on the National Forest right now.
2,000 people, and my understanding is that this group has said, we don't have any leadership in our group, so therefore we don't have to get a permit to do this like anyone else would.
Yeah, I don't know if they're using that as an excuse, but it's definitely working in their favor.
Now, what's the community saying about this, 20 to 30,000 people coming into an area that doesn't have that big a population to begin with?
Oh, no. The entire county here is only about 8,000 people, but locals are taking it in stride. Some are getting upset, as you would imagine. We've had several public meetings in the last week, one held on the 20th went quite well, another one on the 21st, and one last night got a little contentious. And we've got one coming up tonight at the U.S. Forest Service building as well. We've seen an uptick in crime, and, you know, folks are concerned.
What kinds of crime are you seeing?
Well, we've had arrests for theft, trespassing. Some of these folks are trying to camp out on private property. You know, we have folks in the area that own large tracts of land, and sometimes it looks like it might be public land, or maybe they just don't care. I'm not sure. But they tend to pitch tents wherever they can find room, and including the John Day City Park. They had to be evicted out of there.
Well, at least, Kelly, out there in John Day, you know you can evict the hippies out of the parks. They haven't figured that out in Portland yet, or Seattle.
Yeah, I've seen that on the news a time or two.
Well, see, here's the thing I see that really resonated with me. I know you've got a few local ranchers there, folks like Lauren Stout, who said, listen, mm-hmm. it took me 2 years, he says, to get a NEPA permit, you know, the National Environmental Policy Act permit,
right,
for him just
right.
to drill a well. And he's held to the letter of the law. Meanwhile, this 20 to 30,000 group says, we're just going to sweep in and occupy a giant part of public forest land, BLM land or Forest Service land, without any permits whatsoever, and you can't make us get them. It seems as though
right.
folks are being held to two different standards.
It certainly does, doesn't it? Yeah, I guess if you've got enough people and no leadership to speak of, nobody's held accountable.
So the biggest part of the group sweeps in the next week or so?
Yeah, we're told that the majority of them will start showing up July 1st. July 4th is their big day where they will have a big circle prayer, and then supposedly they'll start filtering out after that.
Now, are they promising to clean up after themselves?
We've heard that, but if past experience means anything, that can be questionable. I've been looking into the gathering they had down in New Mexico, and they left quite a mess there. We had one near this area back in 97 and over on the Ochoco National Forest, and they left quite a mess there as well. They claim to have people that come in and clean up the area, but talking to law enforcement that were on scene during the 97 gathering, basically what they call cleaning up is throwing all the garbage into the slit trench latrines and burying it and then just leaving.
Wonderful. That doesn't sound like a good practice to me. Kelly, the other question I've got is, you know that I think we might actually give you a run for your money on temperature this weekend, because the valley is heading for 101 tomorrow and I think 100 on Sunday. I imagine it's pretty toasty out there by John Day. But what's the forest danger like, and what's it going to be like having 20,000 people, I assume, cooking outdoors and using fires and all? What's the potential for setting off a fire out there?
Oh, there's some serious potential for that. Fortunately, we had a wet winter, and we still have a little snowpack up in the hills that's keeping things moist, but it wouldn't take much to cause all that light fuels to dry out and really cause potential fire danger. They haven't closed down fires on the National Forest yet, so... hopefully, we'll just keep our fingers crossed and nothing will happen.
Very good. Hey, Kelly, it's a pleasure to have you on. Kelly Workman is the ops manager for KJDY Radio and John Day. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Hey, no problem, Lars.
Look forward to talking to you more in the future. It is First Amendment Friday all over the Pacific Northwest, Northwest, from Idaho to the Pacific Ocean, from Canada to Northern California. Let's go to Amy. Hey, Amy, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
So I just don't understand why we're rushing this health care bill. It's only been 5 months. Why can't they just get together with a bipartisan committee and work on it and actually make something that makes sense, that keeps the good stuff, gets rid of the bad stuff, and not rush it? Why do we have to have it done today?
I can tell you why. There are a couple of reasons. Reason number one is the wheels are coming off the Obamacare bus. And that's a little flip way of saying it. But right now, Amy, the state of Washington, for example, says premiums are going up for next year under Obamacare by 22%. Now, for most people, if you're already paying, say, $5,000 a year, and they tell you that next year it's going to be $6,000 a year, that will have some families who say, we don't have the money. and we're going to have to go without insurance, and that's bad. We have some parts of America, one county in Washington State that I know of, and about 40 counties around America, where there isn't a single company offering an insurance policy, health insurance policy, on the private marketplace. So in other words, if you live in that county and you're a contractor, you know, a single contractor who doesn't have a company policy, and you need to buy your own health insurance, there's no company that can sell it to you in that county. And there are other companies that are starting to fall out as well. Anthem pulled out of Indiana and Ohio. So some people are being left with a tiny choice or one choice. Some people are being left with no choice. And the prices are going up so dramatically that some people will find themselves without health care because they simply don't have the money. So, Amy, this isn't the kind of thing we can take any amount of time on. When you said a bipartisan committee, I'd love to see the Democrats take part in this. And the Republicans have said to them, we'd like you to take part and help us to replace Obamacare with something that works. And the Democrats, to a man or a woman, have said, no, we're not going to take part. We're not going to vote for anything you put through to try to fix this situation. They apparently want the federal government to write giant checks for tens of billions of dollars to try to prop up Obamacare, which is falling apart right in front of our own eyes. So those are the reasons that something has to be acted on now. There is no time to wait because we're almost to July right now. In November, there will be open enrollment. And if they don't have Obamacare replaced by then, whatever is in Obamacare in November is what you're going to have available to you for millions and millions of Americans come January. And if we wait, then those people in some cases will have no option whatsoever. Does that make sense?
I understand all of that. It does make sense, and I do understand all of that. The problem we're having, though, is we've got Republicans who are voting against these bills. We've got they're trying to write them in you know, 10 days, 15 days, 20 days, whatever. And they're not making sense to anybody, which means that if we can't come up to something because nobody wants to agree on these, not even the Republicans agreeing together, then we're not going to be able to pass anything.
Well,
and yeah, I agree. Obamacare's got to go, and it's dying. But what if we can't get anything to pass? Then we're really just screwing ourselves.
Yes, no, and you're absolutely right about that. And frankly, Amy, I'll put all the blame on the Republicans that they deserve, and they get a lot of it. And here's why: they've known for 5 years that someday they'll get an opportunity to replace it. And what did Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell do over those last 5 years to write a replacement and have it ready to go when President Trump took office? They didn't. In fact, as far as I can tell, they didn't even start on November the 9th when they knew it was going to be Trump and not Hillary Clinton, which was everyone's assumption for a lot of people's assumption for a couple of years. You know, that they looked at Hillary running and thought she'll be the next president. And everybody, including the news media, thought, well, Donald Trump can't make it. Well, a lot of us believe that he could make it. But even after that, they should have had something ready to go on his desk saying, this is the broad outline of how we can replace Obamacare. That should have been on his desk on January 21st. Instead, you saw them slow walk the whole process because I think, honestly, McConnell and Ryan and the rest of that bunch don't really want to replace Obamacare. And they don't really want to run against what they know is going to be a media firestorm from the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal the New York Times and from CNN and MSNBC. They're afraid of that, and they haven't done their work. So I'll put the blame for that on them. But I don't think we have the luxury of waiting. And when you say Republicans are voting against it, you're right. Some of them have said, this is too generous. It's too crazy. And I agree with them to some extent. I read over all of the details of the plan yesterday that I could get my hands on. Do you realize under Obamacare right now, you get a subsidy for health insurance if you're a family of four making $98,000 a year? Now, to my mind, if you're making 98 G's a year, I shouldn't have to help you buy your health care. Buy it for yourself. And one of the constituencies that's upset about this is they say, but all these poor people who are on heroin and they're hooked on drugs, they won't be able to get tens of thousands of dollars of treatment. And I'm thinking, why am I, the American taxpayer, helping to pay for the treatment for you who decided to stick a needle in your arm? I resent that. And yet the constituency that wants that, including some Republicans, is saying, oh, you have to help these people. Well, most of these people could help themselves if they wanted to get off drugs, and many of them don't want to get off drugs. That's another cost to the healthcare system that I think is very questionable. I would sooner spend it on people who are legitimately poor or elderly than ever spend a dime on somebody who got where he got by sticking a needle in his arm.
And I would agree with you 100% on that statement, and I'm not saying that at all. I just feel like, you know, if we can't write something, and if we can't take enough time to write something that we can agree on, then it's just going to keep going round and round and round, and we're never going to agree.
But Amy, do you understand the problem? I mean, let's say your favorite vacation is to go to Disneyland, and your husband's favorite vacation is to go to the mountains and go fishing or hunting, and you say, so we'll come up with a vacation plan that incorporates both. And you say, well, how do you do that? You know, because they're polar opposites. Or you like to go to New York City and your husband likes to go to the hills to go hunting. Let's figure out a vacation that combines the best of both. And that's the problem. You've not only got the Democrats who say we don't want to take part in it at all. You've got Republicans who say this plan is too liberal and others who say this is too conservative. And you're trying to come up with a plan that makes everybody happy, or at least enough people happy, to get a majority and get it voted through. And that's one of the reasons that the folks who run for Congress have to make the tough decisions, and they're not doing it. They're not doing their jobs, unfortunately. It is First Amendment Friday. We're live at Northwest Armory, my gun store of choice for the last 20 years, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, and glad to take your phone calls and your emails. Let's go to Edie. Hey, Edie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, I decided in my 30 years to finally be a whistleblower. I am really tired about how the government's treating us. I work for hematology and a cancer facility.
Yeah.
My job is to get authorizations for their medical treatment.
Yeah.
And even stage 4 cancer patients, I fight, and I mean I fight, and I even write Congressman Malden. It takes me 4 to 6 weeks to get a referral.
Have you been following the piece of legislation that just got passed and signed this week? Because this should change the ball game.
Well, the legislation is a little watered down because it's one of the parts that says it's going to fire anybody who doesn't take care of our vets, but it doesn't tell us if they can fire Try West.
If they can fire what?
Try West. What happens with a patient, unless they reform their whole, the way they do things, and I don't think our government knows how they're doing it.
Well, I would agree with you about that the government is not very good at changing its old practices. But, Edie, I think this legislation is going to change because previously when Obama put a brand new VA secretary in, the VA secretary came back a year later and said, look, I found out I can't even fire anybody. Well, if you're in an organization where people aren't doing their job and you can't fire them for not doing their job, I understand that makes it very difficult to get people to behave differently. On the other hand, if you now have a law that says you can be fired for not doing your job, just that knowledge should shape up an awful lot of people's behavior. Imagine a store where nobody ever thought they could get fired, or a manufacturing plant where nobody ever got fired, no matter how badly they screwed up. And a new boss walks in and says, first thing I'm going to do is the first person who screws up seriously gets a pink slip, and the rest of you take a message from that. If that's really what goes at the VA now, you will be able to get people to change their behavior. And if they say, well, this third-party contractor isn't doing its job either, we need to change that, I have a feeling the VA, the new VA under the Trump administration, is going to behave entirely differently than the old VA. And the ability to fire people who are being gold bricks and deadbeats and not serving America's veterans, just that knowledge alone ought to shape up a lot of people, and we can fire the ones who don't get the message. It's First Amendment Friday live on the Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.